This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
We now have an opportunity for you to ask questions of Louise or Carol. I think we have about 15 minutes. So, it's open to you. Any questions?
Hello, Owen Sharp, Deputy Chief Exec of Victim Support. Firstly, just to say to Louise, I will pass back from Javid his welcome to you. You can watch one another on the web, if you like, later on. Purely in a professional sense, obviously.
Is that going to be on the web, that
comment? but first a comment. Just to very much welcome what was said by you, Louise, around kind of the priorities. The one comment in that is just the bit we have to be careful around in terms of the emphasis is that... a lot of victims in terms of who do come forward to the police, it doesn't get as far as the court system, and there's a balance in that we've got to work through. We need more cases to get to the court and get to justice and alternatives, but obviously the definition and the message to victims is that we've got to be careful that those victims that don't see their cases being prosecuted don't feel like second-class victims, if that was the phrase. The question is off the back of the presentation that we had from Crispin this morning, so trying not hard not to put you in the spot, but what he talked about a lot was around local commissioning, local agendas, and my question is how do we manage the challenge of devolving so much responsibility for supporting victims to local communities whilst maintaining lots of what you talked about in terms of making sure that we don't have a maybe system, because I think that is a heck of a challenge. I'm not saying it's one that can't be done, but I wonder what your thoughts were.
First of all, yes, Owen, I am at the moment concentrating my sights on the giant of the criminal justice system, partly because it's quite difficult to get people to come forward when they think that criminal justice system respects the rights of offenders so significantly more than they think they respect the right of victims. I used to know that statistic because it's mine off the top of my head, but it's something like two-thirds of the public think that the CJS respects the rights of victims, and it's less than a third think it respects the rights of victims. So I think there is a kind of circular thing, and where do you start, and what do you start with? And I think that's quite difficult, and it's a fair point to make about where do you start. I'm starting with that statistic and hoping we can change it, because as the sense that victims get a better deal, or are at least respected and get a better deal, I think that can only go up as we sort of try and make sure that some of the possibly fewer things, but they are definitely guaranteed, happen to people. I think that's kind of where I'm at, and seems to be the right place. Local commissioning is an interesting one. First of all, you know, I'm an independent commissioner for victims and witnesses, and I mean, my own view is that this is quite a tricky thing for them to achieve, and you know, I'm supportive of it because actually I do believe that local people should be able to make up their minds about how they do things, but I don't want the treatment of a rape victim being entirely different in one area to the treatment of a rape victim in another. And I think, therefore, the sort of postcode lottery of where do you live, what type of approach will the local services take, I think is something that we will have to look at carefully as this process go forward. You know, and dare I use expressions like national standards, I realise that maybe that's not the right expression to use, but there has to be some sense of what is a, you know, I'm already saying that I can't look families of murdered children in the eye and say to them, all of these people out there guarantee you these two, these five, these ten things, whatever they are. I can't guarantee it. None of us in this room, even some very wonderful people in the CPS, cannot guarantee it. So that's my worry. I'm pushing for probably fewer, more definite, obvious, important things we do to make sure we get victims' dignity, and we'll need to watch and work with and collaborate, take John and Helen and all of those people at their word about how then do we collaborate to try and see how then we get the local commissioning thing right. There's a balance, but it's one we'll all need to work together on carefully.
I'm Tony Baker. I'm a child psychiatrist. I'm concerned on the CICA side of things for looked after children who are victims of crime, particularly violence in the family, who local authority would pursue an award for them quite appropriately. But while the local authority will look after the award until they're 18, at the age of 18 they're given whatever the amount of money is to dispose of as they like. And I'm concerned that that amount of money suddenly at 18, with all the freedom of leaving care, suddenly makes them a target actually for exploitation and victimisation all over again because they've now got money. I'm also worried about those that then return home and share the proceeds of the award with the perpetrator.
There's never a perfect system if you're going to compensate children and how you make sure that that award is protected for the person or the child who has suffered the injury. However, there are things that we can do to try to mitigate that risk. And one of the things that we will do is if we think that the child could be vulnerable, it's possible that the money could be put in a trust and held in that trust until such times as either the child was able to manage its affairs for itself. There are other things such as purchasing annuities, which can be requested on behalf of the victim, whereby they're getting the money in an annual income rather than as a lump sum. I can't say what we do in generality, because if we are looking at alternative means of payments, we do so on the basis of the facts of the case.
But those are things that you do at the CICA rather than at local authority level, because the answer that I'm continually given by local authorities is they have no choice but to give all the money to the young person at the time. I think it's irresponsible.
To be honest with you, we've recently changed our policy following a number of child victims coming back to us to say that they didn't know that they had ever received an award for something that had happened to them because their funds had been misappropriated. And very sadly, in most cases, by their own family, by their parents. So our policy at the moment is to retain those awards until the child is 18. But again, we can look at other, mechanisms for paying that award if we feel that there is any risk in paying it over at that time.
That's fantastic news. Thank you.
I mean, can I just add to that? I mean, I think, Tony, it's a broader point that I feel needs to be said about children who are victims of crime. But, I mean, it's fantastic, I think. And, we're very lucky that Carol Otway is the chief exec of this organisation, frankly, because she's completely with us on trying to get it right for victims. But what you've exposed, I think, is a broader issue about the fact looked-after children aren't that looked after once they hit 18, and that when I worked at Shelter, and other sort of organisations around housing and homelessness, we were driven by trying to get a much more structured approach and a legally right statutory approach to children who, as they grew up, were homeless, and that when they were 16, they were chucked out of care literally with a bin bag, and that all of that has changed for the better. But the lobby around the children's issues in victims of crime doesn't strike me necessarily as powerful enough in terms of being able to land the issues around children who've been victims of crime. And that's not a criticism, I must make that absolutely clear, particularly of some of the individuals in the room today who I think are at the vanguard of trying to push it. But there is a job of work that needs to be done around children who are victims of crime, and particularly victims of more serious crime. I think the services overall are haphazard. I don't think that they're properly organised and funded. Nobody seems to think about children as victims. The kind of we need to put the child's welfare first is the most dominating thought. And of course, that's absolutely right. But I'm thinking about the next child who the perpetrator's about to do it to, if we haven't stopped him from doing it to the child that we're looking after right now. So I think there is, I'm sorry, I'm jumping on your question, but I think there's and it's great that there's a child psychiatrist in the room today. I think that's an enormous thing already. But there is broader issues here about how we as a society and statutory services treat children who've been victims of crime and treat them for life. Sorry.
Thank you, Louise. That was a very
helpful contribution. I'm onto it in the new year. I've decided this. We've said publicly we're interested in looking at this issue.
Excellent. Thank you.
It's Karen Morton from Escaping Victimhood. We run residential workshops for people who are victims of serious crime, which make a huge difference to people. A couple of comments. Picking up on the issue of localism, I think John Booth did acknowledge that there were going to be some issues that are best dealt with nationally. But actually, victims of serious crime probably get most of the services that they need on a day-to-day basis locally anyway. But those needs, you know, health needs, counselling needs, in theory. But because there's actually relatively few people at a very local level who may have experienced serious crime, the sort of recognition of the special needs that people might have isn't always there at a local level. So I think there's just some caution, really, about the need probably for more coordinated national thinking about what are effectively minority needs at a local level, which must be true for lots of issues. I'm interested also in a couple of people have made references to efficiency saving, speeding things up, and that's not been my experience, really. It's my experience is if there's less people to do the work, it actually takes longer, and that's quite a critical one for victims, so I just wanted to comment, really, that it's going to be really important to see how some of that thinking actually does really improve things for victims. And finally, John Booth mentioning the Green Paper, and clearly there's some really difficult new thinking, there's some difficult things that need to happen if things are going to improve in the environment that we're in. And he acknowledged the fact that some of that thinking might come out of fora like this. And my question really is how to make sure that actually happens, because there are people like me who would really like to comment on a green paper but go a bit sort of phased by lots and lots of small prints, but can be actually, I think, fairly effective sitting around a table discussing chunks of policy with people. So for those of us who might want to put a victim perspective on the green paper, I'm just hoping there may be an opportunity to do exactly that.
Do you want me to rattle through that? The first thing to say is that, I mean, the department themselves, I hope, and I will be asking them to actually do more than pop the green paper on a website and say, on you go, plough through it. And I think they will, actually. So, first of all, I think that they certainly, we have been talking to the victim and witness unit about sort of doing round tables and having more discursive sessions around what the issues are. And obviously, I myself will consider, as the Commissioner for Victims and Witnesses, if I perceive there to be a gap, then actually I see it as part of my job to actually step into those breaches if I don't think they're being done well. I mean, I think that I was listening to what he was saying, and I think there is an acknowledgement that each year there are 800 homicides. Obviously, there are more deaths on the road than that occur, which is a separate but very much linked issue. And I think that I am reading that they're considering, they've always popped that one out as being the example of where localism isn't necessarily the best way forward. That's the one I've certainly heard a couple of times. I'm looking at Owen because I think we've been in the same places. So I think that Escaping Victimhood, I think that those sorts of organisations should be part of those discussions about what it is that they're doing. And, you know, they're going to need all the help they can get, and they're going to want to consult with as many people as possible, and they want to bring as many people on board as possible. In relation to the efficiency stuff, at one level, efficiency meant that we've got a listings process that seems to be like the witness is the last person in at the dinner party that everybody else seems more important at, and that we all seem quite happy to reorganise it on an endless basis, and that the witness is the least important guest, as it were. So that was done in the interest of efficiency of using court time. We actually went to one extreme where we will actually let, you know, I have met a rape victim whose case was not listed properly and adjourned. So the guarantee doesn't even go to the most serious cases that are the most high-profile political issues. So I am too concerned about, when you say efficiency, what does that actually mean for victims and witnesses? But all of that said, you've got to see that actually part of the problem with Crown Court trials for victims and witnesses is that they take bloody ages to come round. They collapse on the day that they happen, and that people are left feeling even more abandoned and bereft. And if people like Keir Starmer, John Goldring, all of those people are saying part of the problem as to why we can't get a better deal for the people that I'm concerned about is because people are so busy and the system is too overloaded, then I think it's important that people like us in the room think, OK, well, we'll back that type of change at Crown Court, because actually if you shift your work elsewhere, maybe the family that I have also met, who was asked to sit in the court every single day to watch the trial of their son, who was the victim who was murdered. Please, can you turn up every day because it looks really good to the jury? And then at the end, when the trial was acquitted and they sat there bereft, in fairness, the prosecutors, because one hears these things from all sides, couldn't make the time to talk to them because they were too busy. So that's probably an isolated case. I don't think that's the generality, but it's one isolated case too many. So my view is if we need more efficiency in the system that creates a better deal for victims and witnesses, I think we should all be up for it.
I'm just going to say something very quickly about efficiency, because I was one of the people who did mention that as being something that was important. And some of the statistics that I just very quickly ran through up there showed that we had been improving our productivity, the speed with which we were putting through cases, at the same time as reducing the cost of running our organisation. And I think in times of fiscal restrictions as we're facing at the moment, and if you're in the business of trying to support victims, and albeit that we're only at one little bit of a whole network of support that's out there, that we have to do everything that we can to make sure that as much of the money that is available as possible goes directly to the victims, and we don't waste money through the administration. And I've kind of seen that as a bit of a personal mission since I joined the authority, and it will continue to be a priority because we're all going to have to pull in, you know, our operations, and it will be important to me that we do that in as effective a way as possible.
Sheila Mayo, I run the Child Witness Support Scheme. Two comments. One was about change of plea on the day. And I just wanted to say that when we support trials with child victims, if we give them proper, good support and preparation, they turn up on the day. And that in itself changes the plea. Mm. So that a change of plea on the day is not always, although you're frustrated by it, it is because you've done a lot of work to get that child through the door. Mm. So if we lose good child witness support through cuts and diminishing services, that is going to be a problem. Mm. And the second thing was a practical thing about criminal injuries, because whilst if we've supported a child, we will make sure that they have the forms and they go to victim support for help filling them in. I work for a council, so we actually don't have resources to do that. Children who have ABE interviews and who maybe make very good disclosures, It's about the gap between policies and reality. It's about who, when, and how those children and families know that they can even make a claim, and they fall through the gaps. I don't know whose responsibility it is to say you can make a claim for criminal injuries, and I wonder if you know whose responsibility it is and can tell me at which point in the process.
I can tell you that you've heard the Victims Code referred to. Well, one of the elements of the Victims Code is that the victim should be alerted to the fact that the Criminal Injuries Compensation Scheme exists by the police initially. And that's where a lot of our claimants hear about the scheme from. In fairness, I also think that one of the you know, sometimes when they hear it from the police, it might be the wrong time, if you know what I mean. It could be while they're very, very stressed about reporting what's happened and all of those things. So I'm not sure that is the most effective way for it to happen. Victim support are very good indeed in terms of being not just alerting people to the scheme, but actually helping them make their claims. And we find that when that happens, that tends to be one of the most effective ways. But yes, there will be people who fall through the net. There's no doubt about that.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you. It's Amy Whitelock from Mind again. Sorry, everyone. I an observation firstly, which is just a lot of what people have been saying about the barriers for child witnesses are very similar, we found through our research, for people with mental health problems. And I think, in addition to that, the very experience of firstly being a victim of crime, but then going through this very daunting process can exacerbate mental distress where people haven't previously been diagnosed with any kind of mental health problem. And that's why I was so pleased to hear what Louise had to say about her work and her opinion on what needs to change. People who were here this morning, now I asked the Minister a question which kind of touched on some of what you were saying about inherent problems within the system, which mean that not only people with mental health problems, but all victims and witnesses aren't getting a fair deal at the moment. And a lot of what you said is kind of what we have found and what we've talked about with Keir Starmer and others. The Minister suggested there wasn't great appetite within government for any wholesale reform of the system. So I wondered, in your role as independent commissioner, how you see you can introduce these guarantees, or how exactly you can deliver on what you think we need to have, which is a system that's equally fair to victims and witnesses as well as defendants. Thank you.
Right. Crispin didn't answer that question well enough then. Is that I'm teasing, sorry. No. I mean, I think that what's the starting point? I think the starting point is fundamentally about do we do right by vulnerable people, whether they're children, whether they're mind clients, whether they're the people that go to Voice UK, whether they're rape victims that aren't any of those categories, bereaved by murder, or actually you've been assaulted, or somebody's burgled your house and your 10-year-old child can't sleep at night anymore. And the criminal justice system is a player in some of that, but not all of it. And my concentration at the moment, as the Victims Commissioner, is to look at where the criminal justice system needs to make sure that we get the right dignity and the right support to those people, so we can get the perpetrators into court so they can't go and do it, or, God willing, they may not. We reduce the likelihood that they might go and do it to someone else. I'm not as naive as sometimes I might appear. In terms of how I go about looking at how we reform that, I suppose I thought the starting point in July, and still is at the moment, is for me to try and reframe the debate away from being one which is very tempting, which is to say either this is all about resources and victims are at the bottom of the pile and that you don't care about victims enough, and you lot, if you were really kind, you give more money to victims, and actually, and I believe all of those things, incidentally, but I think that in terms of how you get something done, you have to persuade an awful lot of giants with a very formidable forces behind them that actually, there's some cold, quite hard-headed reasons as to why victims need a powerful voice in your criminal justice system, or else you lot won't be in salaries to prosecute anybody, or you won't be needing a judge in the courtroom, or you wouldn't probably need the police if nobody committed crime, because we didn't know they were committing crime because no victim came forward. And I know that seems like a kind of far-fetched moment for everybody that just accepts that we have police and we have judges and we have the Crown Prosecution Service, but one of the reasons we have all of that is because people commit crime and victims pick up the phone. So I suppose that's my starting point, really, which is also why it's so important that we get children, mentally ill people, those sorts of people, the right sort of support and the right sort of help. And I don't think we've been loud enough about the reasons. Saying to people in a time of plenty, we need more money to victims, kind of worked a bit, but I know that we've got Carol and her budget, but it's a compensation scheme, and I don't think the budget to victim support is huge. So in a time of plenty, we didn't exactly have somebody blank checking funding to victim services. So in a time of austerity, to use the word that we'll probably hear as the minute we leave the room all day, all night, and for the weeks to come, we have to have a much more cogent, powerful, ruthless argument with the criminal justice system as our key people that we're aiming for, as to why it's in their interests to cut a better and more guaranteed offer, service, duty, whatever you want to call it, service, standard, don't really mind, to actually the people that we need to get into those courtrooms, and we need to, and if they don't get into the courtroom, we need to get them support. And that's where I'm starting. I think the message is the most important starting point. It's the mission as to why we're doing it. And that's why I'm conscious a couple of people have heard that speech before. I'm going to be relentless about the stepping aside, and I'm going to be relentless about why it's in Keir's interest, the judge's interest, the police's interests, the government's interests, to cut a better deal for victims of crime. It's in their interest, and that's where we're starting, basically. I personally, I think, I'm just worried about, we were supposed to end, just worried about the next thing, but anyway,
I think we've got a
we're all right, I could do it all day.
I think you're making some very powerful points there, Louise, that we all need to remind ourselves about, and some of the things I touched on the start of this morning when I was talking about justice. If we can't stand up for the most vulnerable people in our community, what are we doing? Yeah, I say that to myself as a CJS professional. Okay. Let's take a couple more questions. I saw a few hands shoot up there as you finished, Louise. I know that there's some...
Hello, Jeanette Burden, NSPCC. What I'd like to back up is that I am the Children's Service Manager for the Young Witness Service in Northern Ireland. And I just want to say, in Northern Ireland, they've made a decision, local government, to support victim support for the adults, and then NSPCC to support the children. It's not ideal, and it's not brilliant, but the government is funding, you know, are both those services. Mm. And what that means is that we actually then come to the table at the Criminal Justice Board. We come to the table with victims and bring the children's perspective, and they bring the adult perspective too. And it's a really, really useful one. It's not perfect. It's not great. You know, all the arguments kind of are still there, but it can actually be done. I just would like to say that, you know, because we've proven it in Northern Ireland. Mm. Thanks.
I think I'm coming to see you in Northern Ireland in 2 or 3 weeks' time, actually, I think. That's the plan.
Rav Kumar, West Midlands Criminal Justice Board. Offenders that are in prisons or in the youth justice system who later become victims, can or should they expect the same level of support that you'd get if you're a victim who hasn't offended a crime?
Okay. I don't think I've done a meeting or a conference since I started as the Commissioner for Victims and Witnesses where somebody, and it happens to be you today, stands up and says, Louise, do you know that all offenders are also victims and therefore you should be, you know, whatever it is they want me to be alongside all the other lobby groups and organisations that stand up for the rights of offenders. But that's probably not the point you're making, but just in case anybody's going to make that point to me, don't. I've listened to it over and over. Can somebody somewhere just stand up for victims in their own right? Anyway, that's over. In relation to the evidence, though, what I think is quite interesting, and actually Javed Khan did some of this when he was at the London Youth Justice Board, or Youth Crime Serious Board, is that one of the things they discovered in Lewisham, which kind of makes sense, is that actually young lads, late teenagers, were actually so distrustful and beyond the idea that perhaps the police and the criminal justice system would help them, that when they were victims of crime, they absolutely didn't think the kind of, what's the point of stepping aside and ringing the police, because they were going to get nothing. And they didn't think anybody was going to help them. And that then led to their offending behaviour. That, I think, is really interesting. And that is why we need to be cleverer and better about how we help victims. Because if one of the reasons why young men in Lewisham are putting a knife in their pocket when they go out at night or going out to have a fight is because they don't think when they were the victim, anybody was there to help them, then we as a society have a bit of a problem. And that's a slightly different debate to the one which a lot of the offend lobby groups constantly say to me, which is, Louise, this is all about offenders, actually. Everything is always about offenders. And even your victims are actually all of our offenders. Well, A, there's no evidence that completely backs that up. And B, you know, just for once, can somebody talk about the 9-year-old child that has to go and give evidence in an adult court without their mum even probably being in the room? Just occasionally, we can stick to some rights for victims.
Hi, can I just follow up on that? I don't think I made myself clear. For example, say if someone in prison has been raped, what level of support they get offered? Because, for example, victim support don't go into prisons. I was just asked that question recently, so I was wondering how to respond to that, really.
Well, one would assume that a victim of rape in prison would get support. I think you have to ask yourself if victim support can stretch themselves any thinner than they already are. So I'm not going to level a criticism at victim support. But, you know, victims of crime, wherever they are, whether they're in an institution or out of an institution, and actually I would imagine Mind worries a lot about a lot of their people that are in institutions that haven't committed any crime at all and are actually going to be victims of crime in institutions. I guess my answer is I, as the Victims Commissioner, have to start somewhere, and I've laid out in my speech today where I'm starting.
Jasmine Nowell, CPS. Louise, just one of the agencies or representative groups you didn't rattle off in your long list was the defence community. And I'd like you to add that to your list. I'm sure it's there. But because when we do get it right, and we do get it right in a lot of cases, all our good effort and work is then put to kind of rest because the defence just don't play ball, because the incentivisation isn't right, and there is incentives there to strengthen the kind of trial process. And so we're unable to kind of focus on those cases where we need to be able to focus. I'm sure they're on your list.
No, sorry, it's been targeted. Yeah. And Jenny Portway, the wonderful Jenny Portway, is sat next to you. I probably shouldn't say this publicly, but did gently walk me through the incentivisation issue for defence lawyers, as long as that isn't... Anyway, there we are. Yes, you're absolutely right. And I think, again, it's this unbalanced thing, is it? In our desire to be utterly, completely fair to the defendant, perhaps sometimes we go over the top. And there has to be a balance. No one wants to see anybody innocent locked up. None of us do. You know, and we all take a risk on the fact that we probably support a criminal justice system where some guilty people walk away at the end of the day, than we want a system where we lock people up for the wrong reason. But having said that, I think you're absolutely right. And given that my brother is a practicing defence lawyer, this will be a very interesting family process for us to go through.
Okay, thank you.
Sandra Beaton, Louise, your notion of the victim stepping aside is really diametrically opposed to restorative justice. So where does it come into your thinking? Also, any support, as I understand it, that may be offered to the victim before the trial process can be construed by whoever as prejudicing the process. So everything is being tipped against losing the balance of the victim being at the centre, which restorative justice is about, and also delivering the support services that victim needs.
Yep. First up, can we do the myth about you can't support victims, witnesses ahead of trials? I find this fascinating. I go around the country and everybody says to me, do you know what, Louise, this is a myth. Yeah, everywhere seems to go on. I find it fascinating. I met a CPS lawyer the other day that spends a lot of her time explaining to people how you can make it okay to give support to children ahead of, and they seem to spend a lot of their time clarifying how we can get this right. So I think we need, the NSPCC are sat in several bits in this room. It's not like you prejudice the evidence of the children that you support. It's a myth. And I suppose at some point we need to nail the myth. And perhaps when we start with the children stuff next year, that might be something that I try and put writ large out there. I'm sick of hearing about it. I'm sick of letting children down, particularly children, but others, you're absolutely right, down. Probably it's partly because there aren't many people supporting children anyway, that it's, it would be more of an issue, I think, if actually there were more people that were supporting children that were witnesses. In terms of, I take your point about the restorative justice thing and the stepping aside. The thing I honestly believe is that if you're going to hit a message home to people that don't want to hear it or find it hard to hear or are caught up in a lot of other things, which means the word victim isn't going to be even on their radar, I suppose I believe in very simple, very blunt, and very direct message, which is why the stepping aside is a very clear picture I have when I try and look at people that don't understand why it's important, not just they need to be nice. I'm not asking people to be nice. I'm asking people, of course I'm asking them to be nice, but I'm also asking them primarily to do their job about looking after victims properly in the interests of justice in this country. I do, though, think that the restorative justice thing is actually part of that. It's not like we'd stick them in a room and say, on you go. There's a process around restorative justice, and I think it fits into that. We ask the victims still not to take matters into their own hand. We don't stick them in a room and say, fight it out. What restorative justice does, when it does it well, it starts with the victim and says, blah, blah, do you want this, blah, blah, and then it goes to the perpetrator, and then it tries to put them together. And I think that's a process, and partly that's a process where, again, you're saying to the victim, don't go out and beat Johnny to smithereens yourself, because this is going to be the Crown and the criminal justice's response to it, one of which could be restorative justice, another could be that they end up in a Crown Court with our colleagues from the CPS. They're all about saying to the victim, don't take matters into your own hands, trust us to stand with you at this difficult moment in your life, work with us, whether it's with you in a restorative justice session or whether it's with the Keir Starmers of this world up at the Old Bailey. Both of those things are about asking the victim not to take matters, cooperate, and for which we need to give them a decent service. And restorative justice does when it's done well.
Okay.
Excellent.
We'll have a break for tea. Tea is available downstairs.